Republicans hold another presidential debate tonight. Will we get more moments like this?
Look at those hands. Are they small hands? And he referred to my hands. If they're small, something else must be small. I guarantee you there's no problem. I guarantee it.
Donald Trump saying size matters in a presidential debate has been called a low point in politics. Washington State Republican strategist Randy Pepl is fed up.
We have a front runner whose brand is identified by vulgarity and lack of substance. It's disgusting. It's not the way that I would like to introduce my college-age daughters to the political process, and that's truly unfortunate.
This campaign has been a bit of a circus, but really have we sunk to new lows? University of Washington historian Margaret O'Mara says, no, this is not new.
There have been many moments of candidates resorting to pretty vulgar allusions to their competitors. And we can go back to America's first partisan election in 1800, John Adams and Thomas Jefferson, two founding fathers. This was a down and dirty campaign, and you had surrogates for John Adams' campaign kind of repeating these nasty rumors about Thomas Jefferson and his slaves, referring to his harem of slave mistresses. And you had, on the flip side, Jefferson's campaign comes back and makes allusions to Adams' masculinity. And at one point, one pro-Jefferson columnist said that Adams had a, quote, hideous hermaphroditical character. Essentially, he was questioning whether he was man enough or really a man at all. So pretty crude stuff that was appearing in print. And these are the founding fathers.
And you said that they had surrogates doing this for them. Is that what's different today? Is the candidates themselves are as coarse as they used to be behind the scenes?
You know, in the 19th century, it was actually seen as kind of below a presidential candidate's dignity to actually do any campaigning at all. It was seen vulgar to give a speech, full stop.
Interesting.
And so, yeah, our definition of vulgarity has changed over time. That's one thing to think about. But yeah, you often had handlers doing the dirty work for you and saying the things about your opponent. And this is something that was a hallmark of 20th century politics, even up to the recent era.
If Americans don't, and this is arguable, don't like mudslingers and crude people, then why do candidates behave this way?
Part of it is the current media environment that we're in, where the loudest voice in the room tends to get the most attention. You know, think back to the days of Walter Cronkite and the 30-minute evening news. Everyone would tune in. And so if you had 30 minutes each day to sort of tell America what was important, then there was a limited amount that you could fit into those 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
When CNN comes on the scene and you have all this time to fill, the bar for what's news and what's political news changes. And things that really don't have anything to do with the policy substance of the candidates get much more play. And that's something that we're now experiencing. It's now multiplied exponentially with Twitter and Facebook and all of the online media that making noise and dominating the news cycle. Being crude gets people's attention.
Yes. Well, this year we have people's attention. What impact do you think vulgarity has on the political process?
Something that is vulgar to some people is refreshingly anti-establishment to others. And again, we can put this in historical perspective and go back to, say, the 19th century. And let's go back to Andrew Jackson, who,
okay,
1820s. He is a candidate who, he's really appealing to this white male working class vote. And he is speaking their language. And to some of the elites, he's considered kind of a vulgar person. He's using rough language. He's mixing slang and mixing high-minded ideas. And he's speaking to the people and is exciting them and is rallying these votes. And, American politics used to be that the process of campaigning and getting elected used to be a sort of much more rowdy, you might even say rough and ready, vulgar experience. So we may have candidates who are talking about their private parts in presidential debates, but there's been some raucous electioneering in our past, and the Republic didn't fall apart.
Well, that leads me to maybe my final question. I've heard different reactions to the vulgarity, right? There's outrage. There's a kind of faux outrage. Like, can you believe we're talking about body parts? How do you want people listening to you now to think about candidates when they're saying things that are supposedly shocking or out of bounds?
Well, the first thing I'd say is that this has a longer history, so don't despair. Our founding fathers did it. Other great presidents did it, and we survived. But the second thing is that vulgarity or being outrageous is kind of the bright, shiny object that distracts us from real issues. And this was true in the 18th century, in the 19th century, in the 20th century. Now, you know, it's human nature to kind of be entranced by these things and talk about it, whether you're horrified by it or you think that this is truth-telling and kind of refreshing. But I would encourage people to resist the urge to focus on this stuff, either to condemn it or to sort of point to it as a reason to vote for somebody, and instead focus on the issues. Call out the candidates on their stance and say, what do you stand for? We have this incredible privilege being able to vote in this country, and exercising that franchise does make a difference. And I hope that at least this, all the attention that's being paid to this election will get people energized and empowered and get them out and voting and making their choices on Election Day.
So, Professor, now that you've given us some context and some thoughtfulness about presidential vulgarity, maybe it's time for us in the media to just drop it for a while?
I think it's time to drop it and think about bigger things.
And she just means substantive issues there. University of Washington history professor Margaret O'Mara, who says one way to stop the age-old debate of mine is bigger than yours, she told me the way to stop that is to get more women into the White House. Either way, she's telling you don't despair. We're not at rock bottom. This is just American politics.